good to me. Live from the Twin Cities, we are the Daves. You know, this is the Daves.
You want me to be that type of dude, and I want to be who you like me to. But we both know I can't do nothing at all.
All right, welcome to episode 332 of The Daves I Know. We are back. It's been about a month since we last recorded. Apologies for that. I moved into a new house, so lots of life stuff happening for everybody. Recording in my new office in my basement, so I'm super excited for that. I was worried MJ was a little bit late. MJ was running on MJ time as he usually is. I was worried I was going to have to do a solo podcast, which I wasn't really expecting to do, but he did show up. We do have MJ. MJ, how are you doing, buddy? It's good to see you again.
It's great to see you too as well. I'm coming off having played in the American Broomball Alliance Broomball National Championships in Middleton, Wisconsin, otherwise known as that lovely west suburb of Madison.
I'm familiar with Middleton. We used to drive through it all the time on the way to Annie and Phillip's house, my in-laws, when they lived in Madison. So,
I've been to Madison or Middleton like several times. I still have yet to go to the Mustard Museum. And as a mustard lover, I consider this to be a huge, you know, sin committed on both for me and my Wisconsin relatives.
Yeah, you know, they were featured on the John Oliver show Last Week Tonight. A few weeks ago in a bit. So I never actually went to the Mustard Museum in the years I went to Madison as well myself. So love mustard. So maybe we should next time we're on the way to Madison together, we'll stop at the Mustard Museum.
Before we die, you know, Ford Madison home game and Mustard Museum, Dave's I Know trip.
That sounds good. Yeah. Well, to be fair, we've seen each other actually most in the last week, a couple times, Minneapolis City, as well as was it Champions League match you showed up for at the Black Hearts?
I did show up for Champions League match.
Yeah, so we saw each other twice in the same day, actually. So that's good. Maybe give some plugs ahead of time. I read your the Midway Monitor showed up about 2 days ago. So I read your piece on broomball in St. Paul in the Midway Monitor.
So my second broomball article. This was on broomball history. Yes.
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm glad that showed up.
Yeah, it was really good. So if you haven't got a chance yet, or if you don't live in the if you live in the Midway area, pick up the Midway Monitor. If you frequent a Midway business, MJ's got it's basically a page and a half. It's a big ass story, man. So congratulations on that. I highly recommend. Like I said, if you live in the Midway, grab it. If you swing by the Black Heart, they normally have a couple copies at the Black Heart, I think you can read it online, right, MJ?
You can.
Okay, cool. Just I guess Google Midway Monitor. You can
Google
find it. So
Midway Monitor and maybe St. Paul, and you'll find it.
Yeah, for sure. So cool. All right. Well, we have a lot of games to talk very briefly about. We're not gonna break everything down. Just kind of want to highlight maybe some of the trends that are happening that we've been seeing happen in all these games over the course of the last 6-7 matches or so. We'll talk through basically from the last game before we last recorded the Sporks. We played the Galaxy at home. We played RSL at home, New York City away, and then Toronto most recently away. So let's go back all the way to the start. A 3-3 draw down in Kansas City against the Sporks. We had a Dotson absolute banger of a goal. Might be arguably the best goal of MLS so far. And then a Tani brace on either side of halftime. Minnesota United was up 3-0 after 46 minutes. They were cruising. Looked like they were going to just see out the victory. And then Eric Ramsey, Coach Ramsey, takes Tani and Pereira off. And Minnesota gives up 3 goals in about 12 minutes. Morris Duggan, who had been playing very admirably, had an unfortunate own goal in this game. And then either side of a... Daniel Shawai and Dejan Jovetic goal dug in with that goal in the middle there. It was a complete and utter breakdown by Minnesota United's defense, which up until that point had been very, very stingy. Sang-min Jung had a ch opportunity at the very death of the game, the wide open net to win it, and he just shanked one. Ultimately, it was a very disappointing 3-3 draw. One of those ones draws that feels like losses. We'll talk about another one of those here in a second. And with Sporting Kansas City being, in the position they are, that at this point they hadn't won, or they hadn't gotten a point in games in 10 straight matches. They hadn't won, so this was like a reprieve. Unfortunately, fortunately, or maybe unfortunately for us, shortly after, maybe a week after this game, Peter Vermees was let go by Sporting Kansas City. They had seen
Yeah.
enough, and they are cleaning shop there. So, what are your thoughts, or any thoughts you had on the Sporks game from about a month and a half ago, almost?
First of all, I remember being so ecstatic that we took a 3-0 lead at Children's Mercy Park, a place that we have struggled against, a manager that we've struggled against. And I was
Yeah.
ecstatic. And then the letdown, as with each goal, it seems like rather than Minnesota trying to go on the attack or trying to regain some sort of offensive presence, with each goal, it seems like they are bunkering and cowering even more and playing a little tighter, a little less confident. And that just it happens, right? It happens when a team starts scoring and you let that little chip turn into a big crack, in
Yeah.
your team defense or your team morale. But yeah, that was just a train wreck and not one that I wish to rewatch.
Yeah, I think whether sort of the takeaway from this game is I think if I'm remembering like the Slacks, the group threads and things like that was more or less, yeah, that sucked. It is Kansas City. We are seem to be haunted in Kansas City. I mean, we hadn't won a regular season MLS game in Kansas City since last year in the fall when we finally got that monkey off our back. So maybe it was just we chalk it up to Vermees. It's Children's Mercy Park. It's just terrible luck. Then it happened again. They came home. Minnesota played one of their few mid-afternoon games against the LA Galaxy. Chris Ramirez getting the start for the Galaxy. Kelvin Yeboah opens the scoring, I believe in like the 18th minute, and then about 8 minutes later, Chris Ramirez from basically absolutely nothing. There's a camera, I think it was Gabriel Peck, gets to the end line, just kind of lofts the ball into the box, and Ramirez, just right, actually literally right in front of where me and Anna stand, we had the brought the kids to this game, just has like a flick back header, that just beats St. Clair. Really depressing because it was a goal. Chris Ramirez, to his very, very much to his credit, was did not celebrate. Was pushing the player, like pushing his teammates away who were trying to celebrate with him. It was very, very cool to see him do that. I was standing right in front of Colin O'Donnell, and I was like, if LA has to score, at least it's Christian Ramirez. That's fine. And he didn't celebrate anything like that. It happened right in front of us, like right in front of Ragnar. I was like, that's really awesome play. That's being really aware of your surroundings and just, making a shot. And then this game was just absolutely terrible, terribly refereed. The Galaxy were flopping around, trying to get calls. They were getting ridiculous calls. Finally, in the 87th minute, Kelvin Yeboah gets a penalty, draws a penalty in the box. 87th minute, scores to give himself a brace. And you thought, okay, Minnesota's gonna bunker down, see off the game. There's less than 3 minutes of regular time, maybe 4 or 5 minutes of stoppage time, and then in the 90th minute, the Loons concede, dropping 2 points, two very important points. Because at this point as well, the Galaxy have not won a game in MLS, and I believe they still haven't won a game in MLS actually. So dropping 2 points. 4 points total to two teams that are in the bottom third of the Western Conference standings. They are in the bottom quarter of the Supporter Shield standings in all of MLS. Was really depressing, especially after the 3-3 draw. Sporks, you kind of feel like, oh, is this a trend? Are we seeing the team? And people were, I think, a little frustrated because it's Minnesota to this point. It's only controlling the ball about 35 to 40% of the time, right? Like they do not want the ball. They want to counterattack. And so this is kind of what happens sometimes is if you just sit in bunker, eventually you get found out. You know, you make a mistake, the defense lets up for even a split second. MJ, you know, the defense lets up. And that goal that they conceded was basically, I think the defense was just tired. There was a ball that kind of got recycled near the top of the box, and it beat Dane St. Clair. So another frustrating points dropped. I mean, when you look back, if Minnesota is 4 points away from hosting a home playoff game at the end of the year, you're going to look back at these 4 points and say, man, or even 2 points and say, hey, if we'd just gotten one of those wins, you know, it might be frustrating. So what were your thoughts on the Galaxy match?
Remember when I said that's a train wreck I wish not to watch again? Well, I felt like I was watching it again. I will say, with the caveat that the LA Galaxy I perceive to be a stronger club than Sporting Kansas City, and it was not a 3-goal deficit, it was a 1-goal deficit that was erased late. But I felt like this is the wake-up call for the Minnesota United coaching staff and the players on getting better at closing out games, you know, and using a lead to your advantage and knowing how you can play with, you know, maybe it's not extra possession, maybe it's, you know, extra defensive intensity, maybe it's more subs, but just learning how they have to do this to close out games, because when you have the lead, you want to keep it, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, Galaxy still haven't won a game. Kansas City has one win. Kansas City is the second worst team in the Western Conference on 4 points. The Galaxy is the worst team in the Western Conference on 3 points. So just not two teams that you know me again, you're right. You don't expect the Galaxy to be in that position at the end of the year, but I don't know, man. I think they might miss the playoffs this year. So we follow that up with a God, one of the suckiest games I've ever had the privilege of standing and watching. 2-0 victory over RSL. Not the result, obviously. The result is great. It's nice to finally beat RSL, considering we've drawn with them, I think, what, 7 times in a row previous to this match.
Yeah.
All like 0-0 or 1-1 draws. Like, RSL seems to take the worst out of us. In terms of playing really terrible soccer matches. But the weather was bad, rainy and cold. Cold, so cold. I don't know. I'm trying to think back to some of the games that I've seen. The snow opener, you know, some of the rainy games I've seen. This one was so bad because it was so cold and rainy, but it wasn't cold enough where it was like just not quite sleet, not quite full on rain. Never got over to snow. And got kept getting worse. Like me and Anna walked over from our new house over to the black card. It was kind of sprinkling. It was cold, but it was like, as long as it wasn't windy, it was fine or whatever. You deal with it. And then we were at the black card and just kept getting progressively and progressively worse. As we're getting closer to like when we're going to head over, I keep seeing people coming in from outside and like their jackets are progress like more and more wet. I'm like, oh fuck, I think it's getting worse out there. And then it just got worse. We actually ultimately left at halftime because I was like, the kids were at the new house. My parents were watching them. I was like, our new house is about 10 minutes closer to Allianz. So I was like, if we leave at halftime, we can get home, get our wet clothes off, and be in pajamas and blankets and have turned the fireplace on and before the second half even kicks off. So that's what we ended up doing. A great Tani brace again, 30th minute, an absolute great goal in the 55th minute. Forgot to mention that Hasani Dotson picked up a knock in the 42nd minute of the LA Galaxy game, suffering a knee injury. It seemed like it was a non-contact injury, but then I think there was some Gabriel Peck, I believe, like took him out early. He tried to play on, and about 5 minutes later, he kind of like, you know, crumpled over. And seems like he's gonna be out till mid to late May, unfortunately, which meant Owen Jean, who had stepped up and came in the game against the Galaxy, played really well. He had been playing towards the end of games, kind of seeing out games for the Loons. Got a chance to start. He picks up a knock against RSL, unfortunately. So we're midfielders are dropping like flies against in for Minnesota United. What were your thoughts on the RSL match, MJ?
Well, I also I was watching this from indoors
Good call.
due to several factors. I had some unknown things with my schedule. I didn't know if I could make the game or not, due to the Broomball State tournament that was going on, state championships at Augsburg. And then since I didn't know that, Jen basically looked at the weather and sold her season, gave her season tickets to a friend. So yeah, we ended up watching it, just indoors, at Jen's place. And listen, I want to just congratulate and every fan that showed up to that game, to cheer on Minnesota United in person. I've been to the snow openers first since 2017 and 2018. I've been was at the U.S. Men's National game against Honduras. I would take free below zero and snow over that weather, over that, like, wet and rainy and windy. It's just it has to do with, to be honest, how wet your clothes get. When you're prepared for snow falls dry. If you have the correct clothing on, it doesn't accumulate and melt on your body and get your clothes wet. But yeah, there's only so much rain gear you can wear. You're not wearing a hazmat suit to the soccer game. And so, but I just want to say, do not feel guilty if you stayed home because of the weather. You do you, right?
No,
Stayed and
absolutely.
went and left at half. And I want to say, you do you. You support the Loons in your way, and we at the Daves I Know support. If you want to be there, stick it out, and know that you stuck it out in the elements for 90 plus minutes, that's awesome. If you need to go home and then watch on television, that's awesome. If you need to go home and then crawl into bed and not watch the game, that's also acceptable.
Anna, I believe Anna did that. So I was watching the game downstairs at our new house. So yeah, it was funny enough. Like we got these rain jackets when we went to Iceland right before Ragnar was born. My parents got us, and like those are like were great. Like I was bundled up, I was fine. Like my insides were fine. I had left, unfortunately, left my hoodie kind of out. So by the time we were walking home, like the back of my neck was wet and cold. And then my pants, because I don't have the rain pants I used to have holes in them, so they don't really function as rain pants. So it was if you were dressed properly. But shout out to Thunderwall, who played the entire time. Shout out to the Capos, Maggie.
Maggie
They
hired.
were up on the stand for the entire game. So kudos to them. And the team, if funny enough, after all the quotes from the team were like, oh man, the fans that stuck around and stayed with us first half, second half, those were like that helped us through that game. So cool. All right, so then we go to New York to play NYCFC out in up in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium. Loon started out on fire, scoring in the first minute. Tani Oluwaseyi, from just an absolutely beautiful Joaquin Pereira ball. That Joaquin Pereira has turned into kind of a, I don't want to say revelation, but based on what we saw from him last year when he joined the team versus this year, he's taken it up a notch, and he's been kind of the focal point of the Loons attack, threading balls to both Tani and to Kelvin. That's a first minute goal for the Loons, gets them on fire. This game was crazy because it's number one, it's a terrible pitch because it's on a baseball field, so it's a really weird angle. It's a very narrow pitch. So that goal, if you watch the Tani goal from you watch the Apple TV rebroadcast of it, Tani looks like he's a mile offside when he receives the ball. The ball comes through from Pereira. Clearly he's not on, not offside, but he looks like he's a mile offside just because of the weird angles of the TV cameras and everything, which is why you don't play baseball or play soccer on a baseball pitch, guys.
Yeah, I mean, when your field looks like a trapezoid, even though it's not,
Right. And
that's
it does.
not good.
I remember when I went to Citi Field a couple years ago and saw the Loons play NYCFC down in Queens, and even being there, I'm like, I can see that this field is a rectangle, but it does not look like a rectangle based on everything. So, it's the sooner they get over to their stadium over there in Queens, the better. Trap hits an absolute banger. I mean, it gets a deflection, but Trap takes a shot from about 10 yards outside the box and just hits the shit out of it, which is absolutely great. Halftime or near halftime, just before halftime, there is a terrible penalty given on Michael Boxall in the box. Boxall gets the ball, then kind of hip checks Martinez. He goes down in a clump, and there's a big VAR review. It takes about 4 minutes, but then of course the ball don't lie. Martinez steps up and hits the ball and hits the crossbar, and it bounces out. So Loons close up shop in this game, but they do concede a late consolation goal to Keaton Parks from NYCFC.
What a fast, annoying little dude.
Little shit, yeah, yes, absolutely. So,
Like, good
and
on
again,
him, but
I mean, the thing the big takeaway from this is people, people are like having that same it's the same concerns, right? Going back to the games against Kansas City and LA, like,
yeah.
what do we? I mean, we need to control the ball, especially if we have a lead. We can't just like sit down and park the bus and absorb pressure. It is. I can understand the frustration there, and unfortunately, until we see this team play differently, this is what we have to expect. So, what were your takeaways from the NYCFC game?
It was great to see Trapp score. It was great to see us score early. I also agree the penalty was horrible. Usually I'm very like Boxall needs to be aware, like he's got to not do that and what else not. But I felt like even they were looking to whether see if the ball changed directions if Michael Boxall touched the ball or not.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't touch the ball, I thought the contact was really weak. For like, I'm not saying it wasn't enough for the player to go down, but like, you
Yeah.
don't, that's not a foul you call. Anyway.
Yeah. And then, well, I'll just say before I continue, just wrapping up there. MLS, the pro referees releases a video every week, breaking down four or five different plays. They actually break down this one. So we get to, if you want to watch it. I'll try and post it on the Dave's I Know Blue
Yeah,
Sky.
do that.
It is they actually go through they the VAR referee clocks it, goes throughout everything. He's telling the on-field referee to wait. Goes through. He's like, okay, Michael Boxall got the ball. You can see the ball change direction, change trajectory. Yada yada yada. He calls the referee over. He's like, hey, here's what we saw. Here's what we think. It's not a penalty. Walks through the whole thing, and the referee's like, "I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see it." And it's like, I'm staying with the call on the field. It's like, okay, what the fuck are we doing with VAR then? If like the VARs I obviously can see it, so I don't know. It's a really frustrating thing. I think it. Yeah, considering Kelvin Yeboah is fouled consistently in the box and doesn't get nearly the calls that go against him to seem to go against Minnesota. So, anything else from the game? Sorry.
No, I mean, it's good to see them, win two games in a row. I consider New York City FC a tough team to play, especially on that narrow pitch. Usually their style of like quick passing, whatever tiki-taka Pep is trying to instill across all of Citigroup's clubs, that tends to favor that style of offense tends to favor on a short pitch or a narrow pitch, being good in tight spaces. And I think it's very impressive that Minnesota United comes up with a win against a good team at their home stadium. That being said, again, close out games, don't allow goals late, make proper substitutions so you have fresh legs on the pitch, blah blah blah. And this is into a theme that I will say, going into the next game, which I did not watch, but I saw some information about the game, and that's I'll save that shall we say, disturbing trend for the next game.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say about the game against Toronto. I say it's the most meh match that ever met. Minnesota had one shot on target, and it was Nico Romero, and it was in the second half, I believe. There was one decent opportunity in the early in the first half, where Bongi was. I don't think Bongi expected the ball, and he shanked it, but it bounced off Kelvin Yeboah's head, like unintentionally. And so it was I don't it wasn't considered a shot on goal because it was clearly not going to go on goal but forced Sean Johnson into making a save This is the first game that Minnesota basically won the possession battle. FOTMob had it 52-48 for Minnesota. I believe MLS had it 49-51 to Toronto, but still, that's the most possession that Minnesota's had in a match this entire season. They didn't really concede anything, even the chances that Toronto had. Toronto had, I believe, 5 shots on goal. Nothing, none of them were anything of consequence. It really was just seemed like, okay, we're just gonna go in and get a point, and you know, and hope that we can snatch one, snatch a goal and come out of here with 3 points. I mean, even Eric Ramsey, I believe in the Strib, talking with Marth Aller earlier this week, basically said these are, you know, free hits. You just hopefully you can get something out of these games, you know, Eastern Conference opponents on the road. You hope you can get something, and he's generally right when it comes to MLS, right? The general theory with MLS in terms of, you know, getting points and stuff is that you want to win your games at home. You hope you can get points on the road. You don't necessarily worry about the Eastern Conference games on the road. If you get a point, great. But New York and Toronto are two of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference right now, and I'll let you talk about your thoughts from the Toronto and the disturbing trend you alluded to before I, you know, kind of wrap up everything here from the first what 8 matches of the season. So
Well, you're talking about bad Eastern Conference teams, and you're talking about, trends that way, maybe not getting the results you want. At least we won in New York. Do you remember how many subs that Ramsey used in New York?
I do not. I think it was like two, maybe.
Harvey for Lude in the 73rd, and Markanich for Rosales in the 89th minute. 89th minute. Okay. And
We
then.
don't have so we don't really have any attacking. I mean, Songbin has been snake bitten. Bongi is playing as that sort of that right wing back. He's not been able to be subbed in as an attacking player if you're starting as a right wing back. He doesn't. They don't have attacking substitutes that they trust. I mean, Owen Jeanne would come on late in games, sort of as like a defensive, you know, stopper. But you know, he had to start because of Hasani Dotson's injury, and then obviously he, you know, got injured himself, so he wasn't even available to play. So, yeah, I mean, they only made what three subs, I believe, in this match, this game against Toronto.
No, the game in Toronto, they did use all five.
Okay, well
Um,
they had to make they made
but,
one super early. They made the DJ they brought in DJ Taylor for
yeah, but
Bongi.
Bongi was not having. We've all seen Bongi do amazing things on both ends of the pitch, even when he's played out of position, even at right back, he's been playing really, really well. He was not having a good game for whatever reason.
But he picked well, he, the reason he picked up an early yellow card, and then at halftime, Robin Fraser switched Bernadeschi over to Bongi's side of the pitch in hopes that I think either entice him into picking up another yellow, or
Right.
just, you know, just running at him and trying to, you know, eliminate him as a sort of offensive threat. Bernadeschi in the second half was basically not even trying to play soccer. He'd make a little bit of a run and then he kind of walk around the pitch. So it's fun watching that with Bruce McGuire at the Black Card on Saturday afternoon. But anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So they sub DJ Taylor in the 54th minute. In the 70th minute, they put Samuel Shashua on for Trapp. I consider that a slightly more offensive look, someone a little bit more attacking than Trapp.
Yeah.
Sam Shashua. He has a little bit better ball presence,
The
footwork.
problem was when they did that, they rotated Lude back towards that sort of that more of that six role,
Yep.
which is the exact opposite place where you want. I mean, you want Robin Lude, right? And Robin Lude was very I don't say non-existent, but like his contributions were very muted. Like all of the attack was coming down that left-hand side with Pereira. And Rosales making those attacking runs. So, yeah.
And so the last three subs come at the 87th minute. Markanich for Rosales, that's like Sangmin Jeong for Yeboah, Harvey for Diaz. All like for like in the 87th minute. And this disturbing trend is either not using all five subs when maybe you should, like to have fresh legs on for defense intensity, or like try to keep possession to close out a game in New York, and keep a clean sheet instead of allowing a goal. Or in this case, you have a 0-0 draw against not that great of an opponent. Why don't you make subs earlier? And like, I just think 87th minute, that's way too late to really have an impact, to get a feel of the game and to try to score a goal. I mean, I appreciate if you saw some tired legs out there and you say, hey, let's at least get a point. Let's try to shore this up, get a clean sheet, have a 0-0 tie. But like, if you're trying to like maybe score a goal as well as like, it seemed like one of the things I appreciated about Ramsey last year was making a lot of subs around that 60th minute mark. And we haven't seen that as much this year. Now, to David's point, maybe we don't have the resources to make some of those subs on the attacking side of the pitch. But like these last two games, the substitutions felt very Heath-like. And that's not a trend I want to go back to.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's a question of whether or not he trusts. I mean, it clearly seems like he doesn't trust the players he has at his disposal. So interesting to see what they do. Obviously, they're not going to make any more moves before the transfer window closes here next week. But what their plans are for the summer window when it opens, because they only have once the summer like summer window, they only get about like 6 more weeks before the playoffs start. So it's a very limited amount of time for them to bring in, impactful players. So yeah, I guess kind of the bigger things. So Loons are currently 15 points from 8 games, which puts them in second place in the Western Conference, which is, quite good. They're 4 points behind Vancouver, who's coming to town fairly quickly. They're one, two, tied for sixth place in the Supporters' Shield, I believe, with Inter Miami. But here's the, I mean, honestly, here's the teams that the Loons have played. They lost to LAFC out in LA, who are currently seventh in the Western Conference. They beat Montreal, the Montreal Meltdowns, who are currently the worst team in the league in 15th place. They beat San Jose, who are currently ninth place in the Western Conference. They drew with Sporting Kansas City, who are the second to worst team in the Western Conference and the third worst team or fourth worst team in the league. They drew with Galaxy, who are the worst team in the Western Conference and the second worst team in the league. They beat Salt Lake, who are currently in 10th place, so they're not in the playoffs. They beat NYCFC, who are also currently not in the playoffs, 10th place in the Eastern Conference. And then they drew with Toronto, who are currently the second to worst team in the Eastern Conference, on 4 points. So the two worst teams in both conferences, they got 6 points from in 4 matches. That's not great. And then obviously you have your New York Cities, your RSLs. It is so it's just it's this is the this is the I mean, we may look back and some of these teams may get better. New York, RSL may get better. But you're looking back, like that was the meat of your, that was a very meaty part of your schedule that you could have, taken some points from, and be, maybe top of the Western Conference. If you beat the Galaxy and you beat Kansas City, you're sitting on 19 points as well, and tied for first place with Vancouver. So we'll see, coming up here. We have an interesting run of matches. Just going to kind of break them down real quickly, and we can kind of talk a little bit about, what we think about this. Home for FC Dallas this coming weekend. Dallas is currently in eighth place in the Western Conference right now. And then home for Vancouver, a match that was scheduled for the April 26th, but actually got moved to April 27th at 2 p.m. If you didn't see that email from the team, if you have tickets to that match. They got moved because Vancouver pulled out a hell of a victory against Pumas down in Mexico in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. So they'll be playing CONCACAF Champions Cup against Miami, sandwiched around that Minnesota United match. So hopefully they'll be resting some players. But they have been doing that and are, kicking ass in CONCACAF Champions Cup and also leading the MLS in points this season with 19 points so far. So two games at home. Then they go away to Houston. Houston is not great. They are currently in
Austin. They go away
13th
to Austin.
place. Oh, sorry. Yeah, they go to Austin. Yeah, never. Yeah, my apologies. They go to Austin, who are a little bit better. They're in sixth place in the Western Conference. Home for Miami, who are currently, I believe, third in the Eastern Conference. They are tied with 15 points with the Loons, and then away to Houston. Houston is, again, I think they're in like 13th place or something like that. So we're gonna see, and they haven't ever really played well against away in Texas, to Austin and to Houston. Houston tends to be 1-1 or 0-0 draws. I believe we've beaten Austin away, but that's always a tough place to play. The fans there are pretty intense. And then Dallas, Vancouver, and Miami are going to be tough matches for Minnesota United. So we'll see if Minnesota can dictate how they want to play. Clearly, they don't want the ball, or if they're willing to change that. If they, they're trying to play counterattacking soccer and score on those counterattacks and set pieces, right? And the set pieces in the game against Toronto were dreadful. I don't believe Jose Rosales got one ball in onto somebody's head off a set piece. You got Michael Boxall making throws into the box from inside the half. The set piece management was not great against Toronto, and that maybe is that's a, a maybe that's just a bad game, or maybe that is a team actually game planning, knowing that this is a way that Minnesota is trying to attack. So yeah, I guess the questions I have, what are your thoughts on this sort of this next stretch of 5 matches here? And then how many points would be considered successful? And then how many points do you think the Loons actually get here in these next 5 matches?
Well, I'll just say, like, especially that Vancouver, Austin, Miami, those three games are going to be tough. Those three games, we could come up with no points from the from those games. So, I'm going to be a little bit of a negative Nathan and say, we come off out of that, the stretch of 5 games with 4 points.
That'd be bad.
Yeah,
That would
but
be very bad.
that's what I that's it's I
So
will say
what do you
it's on
think?
the floor side of my estimates. It is on the floor side. It is on the negative side of my estimates, but that like that's four. I think
Is that 4 draws, or is that a win and a draw?
a win and a draw. So
Okay.
But yeah, but yeah, I it's this is a tough stretch. And I'm gonna be a big negative Nathan here until and I want Minnesota United to prove me otherwise. But yeah, I think on the hopeful end, you maybe hope for six points out of. That's me being a positive instead of being a negative Nathan, being a positive Peter, would be 6 points out of these six games, and
I think I think you should
I
I think
understand it's a total of 15, and you're looking at 15, and you're like we should get 10 or 12. I was like, no, we're not.
I mean 10 would be successful. I think I personally think it looks a lot more like 7 points in this stretch, just because they're averaging almost 2 points per game. 7 would be a slightly under 1.5 points per game for the team. I think if you get anything more than 8, I think that is a pretty successful stretch, especially considering. And then I guess the other thing too with that is like how many points you get, and then how do you play? Are as the team figured out other options for playing, right? The 4-4-2 has been great. It's worked out fairly well. Both players, both strikers are getting theirs in terms of goal. I think the game against Toronto was actually the first time we saw some actually really good interplay between Tani and Kelvin, in terms of them knowing where each other are on the pitch. There was a really great sequence, I believe, in the first half, early in the first half, where Kelvin was able to lay a ball off to Tani, who had a shot that I think was blocked. And we haven't really seen that. I mean, we've seen both these players sort of. I mean, obviously, Tiny went on international duty in March, and Kelvin kind of went and got his I think 3 of his 4 goals during that stretch. But but we haven't really seen them play well together. I think the two striker system has been working because Kelvin takes up so much oxygen from the defense, from the other opposing team's defense. But I think now, I mean, now they're seeing that Tani is a guy who can run, and can run really fast and can beat them. And so now teams, if they're going to do that, have to take into consideration they can't kind of leave Tani unmarked or kind of shadow mark him. They have to really take him as a threat, as well as Yeboah. So I won't say it's impressive, but that was reassuring and a good sign from the Toronto game that we actually finally saw some interplay between the two strikers, as opposed to one striker getting his and the other striker not really getting anything, even though I think they've been working well together. So
I
I
think
think
the
any
chemistry is only going to improve over the
sure.
season, and so I like what they see. I see how the two striker system, and more importantly, the defensive problems that they had when they went to two strikers last season, you do not see those.
Right.
The coaching staff had time to kind of workshop how they would want to play the 5-3-2 in this off season, and they obviously kind of fixed up some of those defensive problems.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm a little more optimistic than you. I think 7 is easily attainable. I think 9 or 10 would be considered successful. I think if you can get 10 points, I mean, basically that means you're beating Dallas at home. You're probably beating a rotated Vancouver team, especially depending on what happens around their because they'll play Thursday the 24th, so the Thursday before their match, before the Minnesota United match, they play up in Vancouver against Miami. Then they come to Minnesota on that Sunday, and then they have to go to Miami the following Wednesday. So, I think for that game, you're really hoping that Vancouver and Miami, it's like a 0-0 draw. The Thursday before, so that Vancouver has everything to play for against Miami and rotate some players. However, I'll just say, I think I kind of alluded to it earlier. Vancouver has had these games around their CONCACAF Champions Cup matches and it rotated and gotten big victories. They just drew up with they drew with Toronto. I think Toronto is, instead, in spite of being one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference right now, is starting to figure things out. So I think we'll look back at that 0-0 draw against Toronto a little more fondly towards the end of the year, as much as it kind of sucks right now. But I think if you beat Dallas and Vancouver, I think they can, beat Miami, or sorry, beat Houston for sure. And then you hope that you can get, 1 to 3 points from Miami. Yeah, so I mean, I think anything above 8 points would be considered successful for this stretch of matches. Really, I mean, if Minnesota wants to be considered potential Western Conference finalists, I think they need to take care of business at home and get some and get 10 to 12 points, to your point, MJ. I think that anything less than that, and I still think, I mean, I don't think, barring a crazy slump that they, like, again, like this team had last year, which I don't anticipate they will do this year. I think this team is definitely a playoff team, but it's whether or not they want to be some team that can host playoff games in series and do damage in the actual playoffs itself. So, all right, moving up. Yeah. Moving along. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say a few bright spots. I want to say, in addition to like Pereira's obviously huge improvements in year two, I just want to say, like, Diaz looks better in year two. Romero looks hopeful for a young guy for the future as far as the center back goes. Owoh-Washey, obviously a great. Duggan looks good in year two, young again, center back. So I think there's a lot to be hopeful for as far as roster personal improvements and how they're buying into Ramsey's system. So I think even though Ramsey might not trust the complete depth of his player pool, the ones that we've seen play, I like what I see for the most part.
I think the only that's a good point, and I thank you for bringing that up, because I don't think there's been anybody who's taken a dramatic step back, with maybe the exception of Song Bin Jeong. I know people will be yelling at their phones, Bongi, 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 Bongi. But Bongi's playing a different position than he was asked to play last year, right? He's not being asked to be the sort of the spark plug at the top of the line or on the wing. He's being tasked with more defensive responsibilities, and he stepped up and done it. He's done a really, really good job with those defensive responsibilities. So I think the team wants more from him in terms of that attacking prowess and getting forward. But I think we also need to give him some space to figure out how to do that and still do the defensive responsibilities, the defensive things that he needs to do. I am frustrated with Songbin. I think that the opportunities that Songbin has gotten, he has not capitalized on. I don't know
Even
what
subbed in the
that.
87th minute doesn't help.
But even so, even when he's gotten some opportunities, he's the Sporting Kansas City wide open net that he missed. There's a couple games
Yeah,
that, that a couple
I
there
hear
was a couple opportunities at Allianz that he just that he missed or had blocked. He was so it's frustrating. I know if you're not getting game time, if you're only coming in the 80th, 87th minute, like things like that, you're not getting the run out that you expect. I can understand why that would be frustrating. So I really hope that he's able to turn it on. He's such a fun, fast player. The other Korean kid they brought in, I don't know if you've read the quotes from Ramsey about him. Basically, it was very that the kid's basically like just too timid and too tepid, and
Yeah.
that he needs to toughen up. And so we'll see. It sounds like they might try and be getting him some time with the twos, getting him
Yep.
used to getting him used to the United States, the physicality of of Major League Soccer. I'm not sure if that was. If that was the illusion that he wasn't physical enough, or if it was basically just too timid with the ball or with the teammates. Obviously, that's your he's a young kid coming to the U.S. From Korea. He was a really great player. Was he? I think he was like the youth player of the year in the K League last year. So he's clearly a talented young player. He's gotten South Korean national team call ups. But yes, it's a culture shock. As we've seen with other. Much, much older players the coming to the U.S. is a culture shock, and this is a young kid. So hopefully, he gets some time with the twos here and can kind of maybe come in maybe towards the middle of the season and provide a lift for the team and be like kind of like bringing in another signing. So although I know he was a new signing this year too. So any yeah.
I'd like to remind people that people like a Kelvin Yeboah, or a Carlos Harvey, like having, kind of feeling at home with a team and home on the pitch, and if there are any like cultural adaptation or new geography, new city, new place, new trying to make new friends, if there are any adjustments, they're able to keep that away from the pitch and still perform at a high level. Those are the exceptions, right?
Yeah,
And so
Yeboah and we. I mean, recently we've been Minnesota has been very. We've gotten pretty lucky with that. Reynoso came in and balled right away. Remember, remember Robin Lud took a half a season to kind of figure out. And I mean, granted, he was playing out of position because of an asshole, but still, he wasn't.
and his teammates
Bongi,
weren't doing him any
yeah,
favors.
Bongi took a little bit to get used to get ready. To get up to snuff. Even Songbin, he had a great year last year. At first, like sort of half season, he was here. It was still a little touch and go over there for a while, and so yeah, that is the Kelvin Yeboahs, the Carlos Harveys. Those are the exception, not the rule. And so yeah, I think everybody understands that. I think we're all very excited bringing in like a young Korean player who seemed like he had the stuff, a midfielder at that too. Like I think everybody's very excited. So yeah, let's try and keep our temper our expectations. Like I said, hopefully the guy gets some minutes with the twos, and can get his confidence ready, and to contribute to the big team by the end of the year when we really really need him. So.
I'll just say from like my experience coaching, when a player is talented, but they don't realize how talented they are and they're playing less confident than they should, it's really hard to immediately instill the confidence that you think they should have.
Yeah.
If you don't coach that right, they become more self-aware and more timid
Yeah.
because it's just another criticism you're laying. They don't think they're good enough, and now you're telling them, hey, hey, you need to get more confidence. Well, that's another thing that they have to think about or self-analyze or beat themselves up for.
Yeah.
So,
It was interesting. It was interesting he brought it up in the media. So I clearly I think that Ramsey thinks that, you know, yeah, again, I don't know how good his English is and if he's reading the strip or whatever, but it's, you know, it's an interesting data point. So we'll keep an eye on it. Like I said, we want nothing but the best for him. Want him to be a successful player for Minnesota United for years to come here. So hopefully, like I said, hopefully he gets the experience he needs and is able to do it. So, all right, MJ, tell us a little bit about the twos who kicked off their season not too long ago.
After coming off a very disappointing 2024, where they were, I want to say, second to last in the West, for in the MLS Next Pro, now Jeremy Hall and assistant coach, head coach Jeremy Hall and assistant coach former once a Loon Fernando Adi,
Yep.
have the team playing very, very well. They are undefeated. They have 3 wins. They've started the season with 3 straight wins away from home, a 1-0 win at Austin, a 3-1 win at Houston, and a 4-2 win at Children's Mercy Park with Sporks 2, including an opening goal by one DJ Taylor. And I think that goal and the way that he's been playing for the twos has kind of earned him to get a little bit more playing time with the senior team, which is a good thing to see for
Well,
DJ Taylor.
yeah. Well, he did. I mean, he played the full 90 and then on Wednesday and then he came into the game against Fribongi and played another 40 minutes on Saturday. So, yeah, there was a goal. I think I saw it on, I don't know if it was on Instagram or whatever, that Minnesota scored against Sporting Kansas City where the Sporting Kansas City defender basically like heads it over his keeper. Just an absolute miscommunication. Ball's kind of bouncing. Keeper doesn't really commit to coming out to play it, and so till it's too late. And so the defender like heads it, like he's trying to head it back to his keeper, so he, you know, his keeper could catch it and then play it. But he just basically heads it over the keeper. And the Minnesota United player, I can't remember, don't remember who it was, but he just runs onto the ball and just taps it into the back of the net. It was one of the funniest goals I've seen in quite some time. So.
I believe that was Logan Dorsey's first goal.
Yeah, yep. It was like in the 45th minute. It was right before. Yep. That would make sense. So, yeah. It was a. It
Also,
was a.
Darius Randle scoring for them. He was a one of their leading goal scorers last year. Nice to see him. Dorsey getting a brace. His second goal coming with an assist from Darius Randle. So, really good things from the twos this season, especially compared to last season. I think, Jeremy Hall having a full off season to prepare, and having a slightly more consistent roster, I think
Yeah.
is helping. Sadly, Finn McRobb is no longer with the club.
Okay.
Finn McRobb is now, I believe, playing for Indy 11. But
Okay.
up next Thursday they play Crapids 2, in Colorado. And then their home opener is Friday, May 2nd versus North Texas. So get out to Blaine and see them play.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, that's fun. A lot of those games are streamed on the MLS website, so you can catch those out there. And then yeah.
MLS Next Pro website.
Next Pro, yes, right. Yeah.
MLSnextpro.com. So,
Yep. All right. And then as I mentioned, the match on April 26th versus Vancouver has been moved from the evening of that match of that night to Sunday, April 27th at 2 p.m., which I love because it's an Adler match I can bring my kids to. Considering they only have like three midday matches and one of them is the Miami match, and there's no way in hell, as much as I love my children, I'm not paying $200 a ticket to bring my kids to potentially see my to Messi for one of those afternoon games. So excited for that. So make sure you move it on your calendar or get rid of your tickets if you need it. But that should be a fun game against the top two teams in the Western Conference, hopefully battling it out on in a couple weeks from here. All right, let's move on to some lower league soccer. As I mentioned at the top of the podcast, MJ and I saw each other last week on Wednesday for the Minneapolis City sort of annual meeting. We both actually got there. I got there late, MJ. I saw you came in after me, so I was like,
Yeah,
"Oh, I might be
well, so
the last person there." And then MJ and Jen walked in late too. But it was traffic over at the U's. It sucks ass now, and with the 94 down to two lanes, and it's a pain
Jen
in
and
the
I both
ass.
had work things that ended up going much later than we expected. So yeah, we eventually got there, but
It was
there was a
great.
lot of things on our personal schedules that prevented us from being there on time.
Yeah,
So
it was great to see. I think I'm very excited for the Minneapolis City season this year. That season kicks off on Sunday, May 18th, with their home slash season opener, 5:30 versus RKC Third Coast. So, and then the twos, the Baby Crows, will be playing a. I don't know if they've released their schedule yet. Have they, MJ?
No, they do have some matches lined up. One against old rival Thunder Bay, so
Oh, right on.
Thunder
Awesome.
Kill.
So,
So,
yeah.
but yeah.
Yeah, so there's if you weren't familiar, the Minneapolis City Twos are left the UPSL. They're playing more of an independent schedule, or they are playing an independent schedule this year. So, some really sounds like some interesting teams are coming to play the Twos as well. I will hopefully see people at Edor Nelson Field on Sunday, May 18th. Super excited for that. All
All
right,
right, so
yeah, go ahead.
this Saturday, the citizens are doing
Oh,
a
yes.
Earth Day cleanup at PV Park. That's PEAVEY Park. 10 a.m. PV Park. Minneapolis City is joining forces with Revantolet, the supporters group for Minnesota Aurora. So if you are a fan of Minneapolis City, the Crows, or Minnesota Aurora, and you want to know more about supporters group, and you want to give back to Minneapolis neighborhood and help clean the environment, if that's your jam, please come out to PV Park this Saturday at 10 a.m.
Yes, please do. Unfortunately, that's Ragnar's last futsal match for the season, so I will not be there. But I would highly encourage people to get out there and help out. All right, and then speaking of Minnesota Aurora, they have announced a couple friendlies, as I mentioned. I think they've announced the May 11th friendly versus Indy 11. That's Mother's Day. General admission tickets are $15 for that. I have not bought tickets yet, but I think I'm going to take it. That is, I think. Take the kids out there for Mother's Day, give Anna the house to herself for several hours. Then they announced a special May 18th friendly against a undetermined opponent. They were kind of teasing it, and it turns out it was announced today. It's Kansas City 2, the Kansas City Current, their second team. Kansas City is the most one of the most recent NWSL expansion teams. So that's really cool that they're playing in NWSL. Second team. Interesting to see how the Minnesota Aurora stacks up. I mean, they've been announcing players left and right, as has Minneapolis City. And that follows or following that, the home and season opener for Aurora is Thursday, May 22nd versus Rochester. So it'll be a short season. There's only six home games for the Aurora. So yeah, it'll be a fun time. Well, I'm not sure what time. I think the Indy 11 and KC games are at like 3. So there's a possibility of doing the Aurora Minneapolis City double on the 18th. But yeah, check out Lower League Soccer in the Twin Cities. There's also tons of other UPSL and WPSL matches that'll be starting up here in May. So get out and check out soccer. All right, finally, it was announced the Gold Cup quarterfinal double header will be at US Bank Stadium. This was announced. US Bank Stadium was announced as a site for the Gold Cup matches, maybe about 8 months ago. And everybody, it's really weird this year in the U.S. For soccer-related reasons because of the Club World Cup, which is mostly taking place on the East Coast. And so the U.S. So the CONCACAF decided they would do the Gold Cup mostly on the West Coast. Basically, the Mississippi River being sort of the dividing line there, from where, with the exception of Seattle, since Seattle is in the Club World Cup, they are hosting a couple matches in Seattle. So they listed US Bank Stadium as a venue for a Gold Cup matches, and which is cool. The US or the Minnesota has never hosted a knockout round match in any continental tournament. in the CONCACAF history. So getting a couple of quarterfinals at US Bank Stadium is really cool. They won't announce the quarterfinals until after the group stages are done. So, I mean, there's a possibility the US could be at the could be here in Minneapolis. More than likely, it'll probably be Canada and probably whomever comes out of the non-US and Mexico delegations. I believe Glendale is hosting the other quarterfinal doubleheader. So more than likely, Mexico will be going to that one. And then, kind of depending on how the groups shake out, Mexico, there's a non-zero possibility of Mexico and the US playing in the quarterfinal of a tournament of the Gold Cup this summer. So really cool. We'll see. I've seen one soccer match at US Bank Stadium, and it really sucked. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like, especially if the US is not there. It might be
I
very, very
saw
empty.
U.S. women play a friendly versus Switzerland.
Yep, that's the one I saw.
It's like, sightlines and just the lack of area around the pitch just absolutely sucks. Like throw-ins and corner kicks, you do not have a lot of space to run up.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they should be putting and I mean that game that was played on turf. They should be putting grass down for this too. So we'll see.
Well, when they put grass over turf, we've never seen that have any issues at all in this sport, have we?
Nope, never. Not
It always
once.
works
Yeah,
flawlessly.
not a single
Okay.
time. So, all
Sweet.
right, cool. Well, MJ, is there anything else you want to plug before we wrap this up here?
I mean, you wrote my article here, but we've already plugged that. So I'll be boosting the link to my article on my socials. So if you follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky, or Facebook, I'll probably be plugging that, but
That's MJ Matsui on the socials. I am at Texas Zeller. The website is I secured TDIK on Blue Sky, so you don't need to do the MN. You can subscribe to the Substack. Some people have been subscribed to the Substack because I think they read Wes's. Oh, I'll just say, if you haven't subscribed to Wes Bredein's Substack, he's been doing a really great job breaking down the matches, the Loons matches, not every match, but every other match. The most recent one he wrote was on the Toronto game. It's just wberdine.substack.com. I highly recommend that. Tell him that I sent you over there. And then yeah, you can also check out my Substack, the davesiknow.substack.com. It's more movie writing, movie reviews, and things like that. I need to get on that. I've already seen over 50 movies this year, MJ.
I'm really
And it's
impressed, man. I consider myself a movie buff, but it's really hard with my financial situation for me to see a lot of new releases in the theater. I'm obviously retreading old ground, but yeah, man, that's awesome.
buddy,
Keep up.
I will tell you, man, if you can figure out a way to budget for it, $25 a month, the AMC A-list, you get to three movies a week, up to three movies a week. I generally max it out every week, and then I think the cost is going up to $27 or $28 a month in May. But they're adding another movie, so you can see four movies a week if you really want to. So I
There's
know
no
it's
way
not
I
it's.
have time to see four movies a week.
Hey man, I have two children, and I manage to see three, essentially four movies a week. So I'm joking. I'd say that's one of the great, like, somebody last year gave that to me as like a kind of like a Christmas present, like
That's awesome.
the first 3 months, and I was like, this is absolutely insane, and I love it. So yeah, I think I saw like 100 some oh like 120 movies last year. I'm gonna well
Okay.
crack that this
Well,
year. So
so I'm gonna just then now hype nothing against AMC, but like you want to give your money to a local theater that's volunteer run, Trilon Cinema in South Minneapolis. Movies run basically around $8 to $10 for tickets. It's all older stuff, and every month they have a couple themes they're working on. So for April, they have a Don't Mess with Wesley Snipes, and also the beauty of Claire Denis, the actress, French actress, as well as Hitchcock Film Festival. So
Yeah.
if that's more your jam, if you Want to check out, go to Trylon, Trylon dot org. They are a great local film institution.
Absolutely. Highly recommend Trylon. I've seen a bunch of stuff there. The problem is the stuff I really want to see is like it's like members get the first crack at tickets, and I can never get a ticket because it's always sold out by from the member. So I got maybe I had to become a member of the Trylon. So I do love that theater as well. It's a very small, very intimate theater, and they do curate some really good shit. So and then the St. Anthony Maine too. That's another good local institution. I saw Ephes there actually, which is I think one of the best movies of the year so far. So all right, cool. Well, we'll wrap up now. Again, follow me at Texas Zeller, MJ at MJ Matsui. You can follow the podcast on Blue Sky at TDIK. I'm gonna try and post a little more over on Blue Sky from the TDIK account. And yeah, look for our. I'll try and post that link to the pro video so people can see how insane that referee was over the weekend. So, all right, that's it. Thank you, MJ. Hopefully, we will be back before 5 weeks. Don't make any promises, but we're gonna try and do this a slightly more regularly than every month or so. So appreciate everybody. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you later.
Stick with us, listeners.
Try and work it out, 'cause we both know we can't do nothing at all. We do our thing, son. Long as you do yours, land here become feet, cun. Yeah,
we do our thing, son.
Through the act, we attract two, hope to reach one.
We do our thing.
Do it.
We do our thing, son.
Some will paint a piece, some will spray with a machine gun. It's mad work to be done.
We do our thing, son. Son, 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 son.